You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Available now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your favorite bookseller. Publishers Weekly calls Get Scrappy a helpful digital marketing Bible. You can read the first chapter, get special digital extras, and learn more now at GetScrappyBook.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Jay Acunzo. Jay jokes that he's the world's most passionate craft-driven marketer. He is a highly sought-after keynote speaker, writer, and host of the atypical-sounding podcast, Unthinkable. Jay launched his career at Google as a digital media strategist, led content marketing for multiple startups, followed by the VC firm NextView, and today he hosts his weekly show and travels the world, exploring how people can trust their intuition to do more exceptional work. Jay, welcome to On Brand.
Nick, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
I would say, have a superpower of writing a short bio that is full of intrigue, because just on some of the labels and descriptors there alone, I want to learn more. What, for starters, what do you define as a craft-driven marketer?
I love that term. So I think a craft-driven marketer, craft-driven anything, is somebody who makes the process the point. And when you make the process the point, often you get better end results than when you start by saying, how do I get some sort of end result? And so if it's your classic kind of like growth hacker v absolutely pure creative writer, give me the latter any day. If your goal is to grow a meaningful blog with staying power, give me the growth hacker. If you just want some sort of hollow metric at the end of the day that falls apart and you have to start from scratch again tomorrow. So craft-driven people make the process of things the point.
That is great. I love that. And that you also noted that your podcast is atypical sounding. So for those that haven't listened, and kind of a cross reference on to another great podcast, tell the folks listening a bit about Unthinkable.
So it's really an exploration of one idea, which is that it's never been easier to be average in a world where you can just get the answer to anything you need in seconds, and there's gurus and hacks and listicles and all that stuff. It's super easy to find the answer you need and shoot right up to average. But as a result, it's never been harder to be exceptional, because to be exceptional, by definition, you have to be an exception from all this ubiquitous, intriguing information that's swirling all the way around you all the time. So I'm trying to explore the chasm between average and exceptional. And my thesis is, to do that, you really have to hone and trust your own intuition, because there's no list article that'll tell you how to be exceptional. It's very, very contextualized to your specific situation, your company, your customers, you and your team, what have you. And it really all started in a simple place, even though that sounds highfalutin. I was having beers with a friend. I was getting really disillusioned with all the crap content that either companies I'd worked for or with or had seen publishing, you know, seem fine creating in the world. And as a writer, I aspire to do something more meaningful for myself. And my friend looked at me in the eye and he goes, oh, you want to work with people who are bothered by suck.
Yeah.
And that's how it started. I was like, I got to build something around that. And it became this kind of grander, more like fun and I guess aspirational exploration.
Well, I love that that definition of the chasm between average and exceptional, because I'm kind of having an internal tug of war, because on one end, I feel, you know, that that applies to content, as you noted, but also to brands. I mean, I think when this goes up, you know, you'll follow Seth Godin on the podcast, who said that anyone who's known has a brand. So brands of the average variety exist out there in spades. But for exceptional brands, that's an exceptionally smaller group. So I guess I wonder how we can go about closing that chasm, and is there anything that you've learned or uncovered that would be applicable to brands looking to close that chasm?
Yeah, it's funny. It's everybody's out to be an expert, but I think sometimes an expert can remove the self a little too much. There's just, I want to know the most generalized, broadly applicable knowledge that I can teach to anybody. It doesn't matter your specific context. Whereas I think someone who's a mentor is willing to take the expertise they have and understand the context of a given niche or organization or specific person. And instead of saying, I'm further up the path that we're both on, follow these steps, they're like, well, you know, Nick, you might want to take a left here and go up that path. It seems crazy to me, and I've never done that, but knowing what I know about you, maybe you should go that way. And I think that's the difference between an expert and a mentor. And in the brand world, it's very similar. It's like people want to do, quote unquote, what is successful, what works. And I think you become very generic and you're trying to appeal to too many people. But if you have a stance on something, if you have a certain tone of voice, certain set of beliefs and a clear articulation of those beliefs, now you're something to a group of people, a meaningful something. And I think that's how you build an exceptional brand. The average is like, what does a brand do? You need a blog and Twitter presence and, you know, oh, it's funny to have like GIFs and memes in your feed, blah, blah, blah. But I think an exceptional brand is like, what are we? How are we the exception to all the noise? And they just own that.
Well, and I wonder about the role. You talked a bit about kind of all of the checklists and all the stuff that you should do. But I wonder what role that volume plays in all of this. That's an idea I've hinted at, I've kind of circled, but I think so many of us are trying to do, like you said, all the things, the blog, the Twitter, everything that we feel like we should be doing because it's what everybody else is doing. And it's all coming out as average as opposed to figuring out who we are. And, you know, maybe it's only a couple of forms of media that we can express that through.
I agree. And I think it's a couple forms, it's focus, but it's also the volume piece, I think, does matter. It's hard. It's like we're venturing into gray areas here. It's not black or white. So if I tell you that, you know, a volume of work is important, what I'm not saying is just pump up a lot of crap into the world. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm trying to say is a volume of work is important because the end game is to improve and to match your creative tastes. This is the famous like Ira Glass Gap quote where he says that your creative taste is so far ahead of your actual skills to put out any kind of work when you start. So the only way to close that gap is ship a lot of work. Mm-hmm. What he's not saying is be complacent at shipping okay or average work. What he is saying is like keep the aspiration strong, use your creative taste and your intuition, and shipping a lot of work is the way to make sure the reality matches the aspiration. So I think the volume piece is important, just as the frameworks people provide you, the lists of tips, it's all important. It's all stuff to stand on. But eventually, you have to insert yourself. You have to use your own intuition and couple your context with the generalities out there. And I think that's when people start to ascend beyond the average.
You know, that's really interesting, too, because I think sometimes, you know, like you said, all of the quick advice, all of the tips, everything else, and sometimes they don't always square because, you know, I'm looking at on my wall, I've got a framed real artist ship things, and we've got that, we've just got to ship it and we've got to do something. But then we hear, oh, but maybe we shouldn't, you know, maybe we should focus more. And I think that some people get kind of caught in the stasis there of, I'm supposed to do a ton, I'm not supposed to do much, I just don't know. And I think the way you just explained it of the Ira Glass, you just have to start. But then I think from there, in finding that footing, you can also find some focus as well.
I agree. And we just danced around it. But to be blunt, every bit of advice is bad advice unless it's contextualized to you. So it's like it's one data point. If I'm here saying to you, the listener, you should ship a lot of work or you should focus, both could be correct. in your context. And so it's up to you to decide, okay, who am I trying to reach? What are my goals? What do I aspire to be? What is the brand that we're trying to build? Who's on my team? What resources? On and on and on. You know, it's the reason why you can't get up on a stage as a marketing speaker and say, here are the correct number of articles you need to publish in a given week to grow a successful blog. It's like there's just too much context that's missing to just give you an absolute like that. So I think we're kind of dancing around it. But what I'm really trying to say is, like, you know, with my show, with my talks, with everything I'm doing, I'm not trying to say here's the 12-step plan and decide something for you. I'm trying to create more decide for yourselfers, because I think that's how you build exceptional stuff.
Yeah, and a system in which you can decide for yourself too, because I think it's that. I think we've, you are the Zen master, because you've brought us back full circle to the craft. Because I was just about to say it's about the process. Damn you and your craft-driven marketing. I see. I see what you mean now. So well played. Well, and I think that we struggle too. I still think that, you know, strategy's gotten a bum rap, and answering, you know, the questions that you just listed off on what we're trying to do, who this is for, and everything else. And I think that sometimes the ship it culture, the hustle culture, gets in the way of sound strategy too.
I tend to agree. I think it varies. I think side projects are a great place where you can ship kind of indiscriminately and on your own terms. And that's actually a way to build your creative muscles or to tinker on something, or if you're trying to write copy, you know, whatever it is that your job is, if you can do it on the side in a safe space just for you, you kind of find new skills and exercise existing ones. And that's where you can kind of close that gap more quickly, so that in the day to day where you have to be more strategic and careful, you know, you're ready to do so. One example is when I interviewed at Google, they wanted to talk to me more about my side blog, which nobody read, about sports, than they did about any academic achievement or professional achievement that I had, just because they were interested in how I pursued things and how I trained myself. And I was blown away by that. It was my first job out of college. But I think what they were looking for was, like, in their terms, not mine, they wanted mental athletes on the team. And because the world moves so quickly, and certainly Google plays into that and also changes the world quickly themselves, they wanted somebody who was like, okay, I'm kind of going to decide for myself how to do these things and tinker on the side and develop those making muscles, if you will. And so I don't know if that exactly answers your question, but I think that side project culture that we're living through because of the internet is actually really, really helpful if you're in marketing, in any function in marketing, to prepare yourself to be more strategic and powerful with whatever you do.
Yeah. And I love the side project note, and especially the Google hiring, because it reinforces advice that I give my students in terms of what they can do. And I always encourage them to just show that you can create something, show that you can express yourselves online, even if it's not related to marketing or finance or whatever you're pursuing in the 9-to-5 hours, that other stuff matters just as much.
I love the show don't tell part. I mean, that's it right there. I was always struck by career services giving you a template. It's basically them saying, hey, if you'd like to blend in, just do this. And then I started talking to actual humans in business, and you realize, wait a second, they're pouring over template after template. If I didn't create that template, if I did something that was an exception, they would see me as exceptional and maybe I could get that job. So I love that. It's never been easier, like I said, to be average and to be exceptional. You just have to insert more of you into what you're doing.
So how can you do that? I mean, what are the best, I'm asking for those tips and advice again that we've just debunked, but for that career seeker out there, for that student of mine, that senior marketing major out there who hears that about inserting more of themselves into their work, how can one go about doing that?
Yeah, it feels like such a leap, whether I'm telling you as an individual in your career, bet more on yourself. Or, you know, trust your gut or your intuition. Or if you're a brand and I'm saying, okay, well, let's emulate something more aspirational than we currently are. Or here's an example, like Red Bull, which everyone always freaking cites. And then the answer is, oh, I'm not Red Bull. Why are you giving me that example? There's always this like scary leap that you look at between average and exceptional. And so like, what do you do to get across a chasm? You build a bridge. And the very first thing you do when you build bridges at least cheaply and given a little research I've done into bridge building, because I'm no expert there, but is you throw this like anchor to the other side. So you have this rope that's taut, it's caught in something on the other side, and you can start to, you know, basically attach planks to walk across. And so I call this the aspirational anchor. And basically this is a way of elevating what you're doing beyond average towards the exceptional in a statement that is both specific and concrete. So I'll give you an example back to the career question. So let's say it was my career. I aspire to be, let's go crazy here, the Anthony Bourdain, who I love, the Anthony Bourdain of business content. Okay, that's totally meaningless to you. But here's how it's specific and concrete to me. Anthony Bourdain is amazing at telling moving, emotional, and surprising stories pulled out from seemingly mundane or day-to-day scenarios. So I have to get good at that skill if that is my aspirational anchor. That's how it's specific. The way it's concrete is, you know, how I know I've reached it. It's firm turf. To me, that means I need one project, one show. Maybe it's Unthinkable, the podcast that I'm doing, or something different that provides the bulk of my exposure and notoriety and income. And then I need to be able to have that kind of fund or allow for tangential adventures. Because with Bourdain, he's got the CNN show, then he writes books and he speaks and he has a marketplace, right? So now I have this aspirational anchor that feels specific and concrete, and it elevates my eye line above what is someone else telling me to do, or what does the Google results page say is the best XYZ. And I think from there, that's the fundamental starting point of all these other kind of steps in the methodology that I'm ironing out right now.
Well, I love that. I'm trying to think, is there a name for that approach? If there is, it escapes me. We're the blank of blank.
Well, coming from the VC world, which I just did, it's a bad way to pitch VCs, that's for sure. We're the Uber blank. Yeah. I don't know. I've always spoken in terms of analogies and metaphors. I think it's because I have an English lit degree, and the only way I get a return on that degree is if I speak almost exclusively in analogies and metaphors. I think that's how that works.
Yes, that's...
Yeah. But I don't know if there's an actual trope. I mean, for most, like, the knee-jerk reaction I have is just giving a crap. It's like, I don't want to just scoop up a list and follow it. I'd like to matter in my career, my life, whatever. You know, I am a millennial, so I guess that's apropos for me to say, but I do believe it.
Right. Well, and I love that, because I think what those metaphors give you, you know, and I think, you know, we talked about it in a personal career context, and I think you could do the same thing. Granted, some have abused it with mostly worthy Uber for XYZ, but it's a great system because it leads you to a framework like you just outlined with Bourdain, because, you know, you've got the flagship show and the other supporting pieces in there as well. So a lot of times it can be almost a strategic shortcut in how to get where you're trying to go.
Totally. And I think, you know, I've seen this in working with brands and workshops, that this aligns a team in a way that everybody's excited about. Everybody starts drawing from influences outside of their echo chamber. And everybody understands that, like, you know, saying we're going to be the best in lead generation in a B2B sense, or that we're going to have the industry leading brand in this niche, those are byproducts of achieving this aspirational anchor. So, like, what is it you're actually trying to do? And articulate it in such a way that it's not, you know, here's what most people do in the career sense, for example. I want more meaning. I want a better job. I'd like a mentor. And that's like throwing this anchor halfway across the chasm and watching it fall. You're building a bridge to nowhere. But if you can make it aspirational, but at the same time specific and concrete, now you have something to align around and work towards in a logical, safe way.
So to perhaps enrich or even complicate this metaphor further, we talk about the chasm, we talk about bridges. If we're in a chasm, some of us, it seems sometimes like there is a fog that has settled in. What's the best way to kind of get your bearings within that as well?
Yeah, I mean, I love it. Let's keep going with the analogy or the metaphor at this
breaks.
Point. Yeah, exactly. Well, although it's a bridge analogy, so we should be careful. Yeah. Hopefully it won't. I think everything you did to get to average acts as a sort of either safety net or harness, such that you can rely on technical skills you developed. You can rely on, yes, all those list articles and experts that you love to follow. Like, it's all profoundly useful. I mean, it's an amazing era that we live in, that we can find these things or hone our skills during free time or lunch hours because the internet has no gatekeeper. This is awesome. This isn't a negative. It's just that a lot of people, I think, get stuck there. So if you're lacking that clarity, I think you can kind of get some confidence from the fact that you have that harness, technical skills. But, you know, like, why do certain people make it across the bridge when you don't? I think it starts with that aspirational anchor. They have clarity and their eyes on where they want to go. You know, I liken it to, you know, if you're kind of wandering in the woods and you see a mountain peak in the distance, you have to find a path to it. Like, you need to also keep your eyes on the mountain peak. So, like, that's the first step, is like, where are you trying to go? And if you don't have that, you're going to continue to be lost. And I think another is what I call, like, the first principle insight about your audience or your task at hand. So if you why something to death enough, you'll get a lot of clarity. And it sounds stupid simple when you arrive at that clarity. For example, there's a great company in Boston called Drift. And they recently decided, they're a B2B software company. They sell messaging software. They decided to remove all gated content from their website. They're going to set all their content free. Their first principle insight about their audience to give them that clarity was simply, human beings dislike forms. And as soon as they removed those forms, they found the clarity of what could separate their marketing, free content, ungated for all. They grew their email list 150% month over month just by doing that. People opted in voluntarily instead of being forced. They grew their customer base 30%, then 35% month over month, and 250% year over year. And so, like, that all happened. They did exceptional work just because they just asked, like, why are we doing this stuff? Why are we trying to get leads? Who are leads? Well, oh, they're people. Do people like these things? Do you like these things? Oh, no, crap. We're doing things people don't like. Stop doing things people don't like. It sounds so simple, but if you're lost in the woods, it kind of gives you that clarity.
I love the idea. I'm a huge fan of why in general, but I've never heard of whying something to death. And I would have to think that if you beat something up with that, you would eventually get where you need to be.
We layer on thinking on top of thinking on top of thinking and process and red tape and goals, and we just forget why we exist sometimes. And I think that's the power of asking that why question over and over again, is you have nowhere else to go. So once you have that firm footing to stand on to start, you can build up from there in a way that has more clarity. You know, if your goal of a side project is just to have fun, why are you meeting 7 friends for coffee to ask about best practices for YouTube? Just launch the first video that you create if it feels like fun, and away you can go.
So how do you know when you're there? I mean, sometimes you have obvious examples like Drift, where, you know, grown subscriber lists and everything else. But what if it's less clear? Do you keep iterating? Do you keep whying it?
I think that's why I like this analogy of having some kind of aspirational anchor that you, like, throw across the chasm, because it's this thing that you can kind of reel back in and throw again. And then, or if you get across that first chasm and realize there's a bigger one on the other side, you can do it again and again. It's just re-engineering where you're trying to get to all the time. Like, spend more time reflecting on, what do you aspire to be? So if you're saying, I want to be the GQ of my industry, like, defining what that means up front and then doing some kind of constrained test to move in that direction to see if that's real. And if it's not, pull back and say, okay, I have this insight about my audience. It's the first principle that I've wired all the way down to. I have this aspiration I need to articulate. I thought it was GQ of my niche. It's not. We did this little test. It doesn't make sense for XYZ reason. Let me pull back, re-examine that insight. Do I need to ask why more? Do I need to go and talk to some customers more? Do I need to throw a different anchor and articulate it in a different way? There's this, like, ability, it's a bridge, to take a step back, right? I think everyone's like, so go, 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 go. I mean, I'm that way, given my energy. But you can take a step back. You can pause. You can go for a walk. You have a coffee meeting. Just chill the hell out and just rethink that first little step that you want to take. And no big deal. If it didn't work, take a step back, rethink it.
Well, it's funny because sometimes we do get into that autopilot mode where it's like, no, I have to have we always have a podcast out, you know, on Wednesday. And if it's not quite working, you know, just take a step back. Oh, but we can't. But we always do this. And I think it is OK to take that breath and look at what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Yeah, two of the hardest decisions I've made with my show, and they ended up being really good decisions, was, number one, I was doing the classic mistake that other people say not to do, and I didn't listen, which is just spreading myself too thin across too many channels. And so I made it a little announcement on the Facebook page for the show and said, look, I'm not doing anybody a good amount of service here because I'm just kind of like putting a link and forgetting about it here. I'm not building community. For now, we're going to pause Facebook and I'm going to focus more on the email list. So here's the link to the email list if you want to get on that. We'll have a lot more value coming on Facebook in the next couple of years, but right now it's not time. And then the second thing was we took the summer off last year to re-examine the structure of an episode and to articulate the journey that we were trying to be on with the show and all the different kind of thinking behind it. We just, again, got strategic. And those were hard because it felt like hitting a pause when you're supposed to just keep shipping stuff. But now it's working more. I have more clarity. I'm burnt out a lot less. So you can take a step back and realize, wait a sec, if I do that, I might be able to run further and faster and also in the right direction.
So as most folks are listening to this, it is the first couple of weeks of the new year. And say, as I would imagine, that this message of average versus exceptional resonates with people and they're thinking, shoot, we need to do something differently. It's the beginning of a new year. We have time, but we really haven't done a lot of homework on re-engineering where we're at. Is there a simple exercise that someone can do to take stock of where they stand on average to exceptional and making any steps in the right direction?
Yeah, one of the simplest exercises you can do, because it's both a learning exercise, in other words, you start to think differently, and also it's something that can be very tangible that you can apply directly right now, is something I call, for lack of a better term, an extraction. And so basically what it is you find something you admire that you deem exceptional. So I use the Anthony Bourdain example. So let's say it was his show on CNN. I do think he created an exceptional show. If I was like, oh, my podcast isn't working, my brand's not growing, I don't know, I would go and watch that show. And instead of just consuming it and making it feel, you know, good to consume, I want to study and extract how they do it, the framework underneath. It's like putting an X-ray lens over something I deem exceptional. And it's like revelatory because all of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh, they have a plan. Everything that's exceptional seems to have a plan. It's not happenstance. So if I can get behind it to find the framework, I can steal from it. I can borrow from it, or at least I can think that way about my work. And so how does he open a show? Minute to minute, what did he accomplish there in the first 5 minutes? When do they go to commercial? Do they leave you hanging? You know, how does he tell his story when he narrates versus when I narrate my show? And just taking notes and doodling, now I can go back to my work and try to install and borrow and adapt some of that stuff and couple it with my own experiences. So I call that an extraction of something that you really love out in the world and preferably outside of your own echo chamber.
I like that last point, too, especially outside of your own echo chamber, because I think a lot of times, especially when we're looking at the brand perspective, we look at people in our industry or even in a similar sector in general. And I love the Anthony Bourdain example. I mean, I think even not even a personal brand could say, we want to be the Anthony Bourdain insert other public personality in there as well, because I think especially when you apply that personality to a business brand, it can help you humanize what you're doing as well.
Absolutely. And the outside the echo chamber piece is super important because I've always been blown away working with especially larger brands who want to see a case study from their industry. Like, oh, you know, okay, you're selling me software. Can you show me a case study of someone who's already purchased from you in finance because I'm a bank, or, you know, someone who's used Facebook or this new channel because I want to play it safe and know that others in my industry are finding success there. Nobody's ever done anything better than average by simply copying what others are doing. So like the fact that no one has done something in your niche a certain way is actually a reason to do it. And you really can't get that way, get that thinking, unless you go outside your echo chamber for inspiration.
I love that. Well, as we start to wrap things up here, we always ask if there is a brand that has made you smile recently.
Yes. So I'm a big fan of all things Bill Simmons, who is a former columnist at ESPN, now works for HBO, but he has his own digital media property that's hosted on Medium called The Ringer. It's just theringer.com. And recently they sent an email addressed from the editor-in-chief, who is not Bill Simmons, and another guy he hired. And he basically started recapping the year that was and thanking me for being a subscriber. And I don't know if they segmented by how early you subscribe to their newsletter or if they sent it to everybody, but it was this personal look at what usually is just a link roundup with an individual instead of a brand name addressing me directly and making me feel like I was part of it, like I was part of something. And there were some inside jokes that you could only get if you were an avid reader that I understood, so I felt even more loyalty. It was just this wonderful experience of being really human about addressing probably hundreds of thousands of subscribers if you're them. So I just loved that, theringer.com.
Awesome. Well, we will definitely be sure to link up to that in our show notes. Speaking of links and such, Jay, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Unthinkable.fm is probably the best link to reach me at on all social channels. I'm hyperactive on Twitter and Snapchat. I'm just Jay Akunzo. And Snapchat is my behind the scenes kind of ride along stuff.
Awesome. That is great. We will link up to all of that. Jay, thanks for joining us on Brand.
Thanks so much, Nick.
And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community. Recently, Dylan Diewold gave us a shout out on our 100 episode milestone. Dylan, thanks for listening. And a reminder, if you heard like something on this episode or another, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know on Twitter using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. You can find links to everything that we talked about at branddrivendigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes and Stitcher. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. Remember, On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Order now at Amazon and check out GetScrappyBook.com for special offers and extras. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to OnBrandPodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.